Hello, and good day to you from episode 18 of our podcast series, Project Breakaway, a metaphorical and literal time in the day when we here at Predator Cycling take some time away from working in the back shop to come and share with our listeners what we're doing, how we're doing it, what it takes to do it, our ideas, our innovative success stories, and even our missteps and failures. If you find yourself with an interest in bicycles, composite manufacturing, out-of-the-box design, or even curiosities beyond, I encourage you to stick with us, settle in, and learn a little. I'm Courtney B., co-owner and project manager of Predator Cycling. I'm here with my partner, Aram Goganian, the other co-owner, CEO, lead design and engineer, and virtual conference guru of Predator Cycling. How's it going, Aram?
It's going pretty good.
Virtual conference guru. Try and say that one.
That's difficult. I'm not going to try, but I'll take the title.
So welcome back. It's not Monday. It's Tuesday. We were busy yesterday.
We were busy.
Feels like we've been gone a while. I don't know. Maybe because we actually did some outdoorsy things this past weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We were actually social. We got
kind of social.
Yeah, as much social as COVID allows us to be. But we got the little guy on his new push bike. He's gliding now.
He's doing really well. It's fun. I have to say, it's probably one of the coolest things to see is like something that we built and our little boy's riding it. And he really likes it and he won't let anybody touch it. And he's like, my bike. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah. So we were outside, we did that. And then you also, of course, just, you know, worked on the weekend. You're doing a lot of back end work on the website, migrating customer data, updating softwares. We're becoming a little bit more organized here.
Yeah. We're trying to get all of our, now that we've gotten all of our manufacturing systems set up, we're just trying to focus more on the front end of things. So the back end of the front end of the business.
Right. We're always trying to make people think we're a 100-person company and not a 2-person company.
Yeah, well, just trying to be able to have easy access to customer data so that we can answer questions quickly and get back to people, and all of your order data is put together, and just trying to be efficient. So save us time and spend more time designing products and cranking stuff out. Mm-hmm. So
cool. So last week, your GTC virtual conference aired online.
Yeah.
You did a pre-recorded 45-minute discussion on how NVIDIA's GPU acceleration assists you in your design and development of our new products.
Yep.
You kind of discussed our previous workflows for utilizing 3D printing as tooling way back when, and then kind of focused on the limitations because of our simple computer power and software access we had at the time.
Yeah, and also just talking about the way we designed then, and I mean, people still do, the basic principles of the design process and how it, anyways, yeah.
Right, yeah, it was kind of our timeline. And then you compared that workflow to now.
Yep.
So as we have mentioned quite a bit here on the last few episodes, we do have a supercomputer now.
Yeah.
The Lenovo P620, and it's paired with the GPU power of the NVIDIA RTX A6000.
Yep.
So you kind of made a timeline in that discussion of how we've used 3D printing in the past all the way to now.
Yeah.
Like, like yesterday.
Yep. Yeah, and today.
Yeah. So just a quick review of your course that you had. It was basically how you designed around the limitations of the computer and the GPU.
Yep.
And then you mentioned how we evolved and began relying on the computer and the software to basically do the design work for you.
Right.
Which was basically like AI. So like, hey, computer, here's my requirements.
Yeah.
Make me a part.
And one of the things that's interesting, I think, is because, I mean, we're a little different of a company than most when it comes to product. We are designing a product for a very specific thing in mind. I mean, like, we're like, for instance, our water bottle cage, let's use that as an example. We have a target for the weight, we have a target for all of our material properties and specs. Like, we know exactly what we want this thing to do and how we want it to perform. And we're fortunate enough to understand the physics along with it, so we know our load restraints. We actually have the ability to do some of our own testing to figure all that out, and we can put that into the computer. So when we talk about like AI driven design, or you know, generative design, and the first forms of it that we used, you know, we thought we could just plug in all the data and just let the computer come up with the optimal structure.
Right.
And, you know, which is really cool, and you can do that, but there is limitations to what that can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it still becomes a very like, you know, binary approach where it's like you're putting something in, you get a result back, and then you're just putting in and changing things. And it's not dynamic and it's not collaborative. So those are kind of the limitations of it. But yeah, that was our first approach to it.
Right.
And also back then we didn't have the local compute power. We were relying on cloud compute.
Right. Well, that's kind of like if you go way, way back when we were talking about how we just used the software to, we had the limitations of the software.
Yep.
Before the bottle cages, when we were doing 3D print, and it was kind of just like, hey, we're making, you know, a metal mold, and wouldn't it be cool if we had a 3D printed insert to kind of help us mold this shape in a way that we couldn't cut the metal for. So that was our use cases back way when.
Yep, absolutely.
So we were designing basically for tiny little pieces and parts, and we hadn't thought forward and going, oh, wow, let's just 3D print an actual product.
Yeah, I mean, well...
The limitations of the computer and the software we had at the time.
And the hardware of the printers and accessibility. But like also like, I mean, you know, at that time, and that's one of the things I talked about in the course was, or in the talk was that, you know, we originally, when we got a printer, I mean, I thought we could print consumer end parts right off the gun. That's what I was excited
about.
With
our like small, like FFF printer.
Yeah. We couldn't.
Like the one you get and like the first thing they ask you to print is like a tiny little like boat.
Yeah, a little boaty
thing. And you were like, I'm going to make all of our products.
Yeah. But, you know, obviously that wasn't going to work. But
trial and error, I guess.
Oh, for sure. You learned a ton. But like, I think the interesting thing was at that point we were adding it on and like exactly what you were talking about. We added on to our capacity. So like, oh, here's, we're basically not changing our workflow. We're not changing anything. We're just adding capacity.
I think we really shot for the stars though with what the shapes we were trying to add to the molds.
Yeah. no question. We pushed it as far as we could push it. But the thing that kind of hit our limitation was our workflow. Like the actual way we were using it and what we wanted to try and leverage out of it.
Yeah.
We did not have our...
Just the cost, because I remember us trying to, back when we were doing, not the bars we have, but we were doing, you know, trying to do iterations of the bars and like make them better and mold them better. And basically you'd print a part and we'd be like, oh, that's awesome. That shape is awesome. It's going to work. But the only way to get it out was basically to break it. So it wasn't cost effective to just print a part and have to break it every time.
Oh no, there was a lot of, there's a lot of limitations that we hit, but I think what I'm trying to get to is that the limiting factor, even then, we didn't know it at the time, but our limiting factor was our approach to our workflow was what held us back from being able to leverage even the printers we had then. And I mean, also, I mean, the availability of the tech didn't exist yet. And we did not have the local compute power to even push some of the stuff we're doing now.
Well, so, I don't think we would be where we've been in the last couple of months without the, you know, Lenovo and NVIDIA.
No. I mean, ever since last year when we started working we started working a year ago with Ansys.
Right.
That just kind of opened up the door for us because, anyways, yes.
And it's always, I know, because it's, I mean, yes, we have the software and we have the hardware now, but we've always had you. And so it's just.
We've always had both of us, yes.
But yes, but like when it comes to the design and it actually comes to sitting down on a computer and I don't do that.
Right.
I can come over and tell you what looks good and what doesn't look good, but you're sitting there. But we've always had you and we've just never had your support. And now that we have your support, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
We can actually get things done like quickly, and which I love. I'm like, oh, great. A new piece, a new part. Great. Awesome. Let's get
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And yes, but, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And the also on top of that, I mean, this is slightly off of the GTC talk, but like, the fact of having simulation and being able to simulate products, I mean, I can come up with idea. I mean, I get, Courtney jokes about it, but I get ideas all the time about, oh, we should do this or we should do that. But like now.
Those aren't jokes. Those are just me coping with them.
Oh my God. There's got to be a support group for this. But like my point is that I can now come up with these ideas, and within seconds of coming up with the idea, I can model it and I can simulate it to see if it's going to work or not work. And then I can try and pitch this to Courtney and I'll be like, all right, I got this. Like, check out the results.
I'm a visual person.
Right.
So you need to show me what you're trying to make
so
I can justify it before you're like, hey, every morning, literally every morning, hey, I have an idea. So I'm like, okay. And I listen and, you know, me describing it to me is not going to do anything.
No.
But if you can pop on your computer and be like, hey, come over here and look at this. And then I got to get up. Okay, here I come.
Well, yes, that is all true. That is all true. And that is morning to morning. But like the thing too is with Ansys, I can show you actually, okay, look, here's the loads. And it's great because like Courtney is not a mechanical engineer by trait.
Shut your mouth.
I mean, your understanding of your intuition on parts and where they're going to break and what's going to happen and understanding of it is really good. I mean, you're back.
But I also like the value. So usually you would come with me with an idea and be like, hey, I drew this on the piece of paper. And my question is always, well, is it going to work?
Right.
Because I don't want to entertain the idea any further if it's like not going to be a viable option.
Right. Absolutely.
But now when you're like, oh, well, the computer said it's going to work.
Right. No, but
it ran a test and I'm like, okay, well then let's go down the path of actually making it and trying it.
Yeah. Well, no. And I mean, to be honest, I mean, this is kind of going off of our GTC talks, but I the thing for me is I have an internal problem of
which,
self.
Which one?
I have many internal problems, but one of my problems is I am, it's at Predator here. I am the person that does all the design and engineering work. So, I mean, Courtney's a great sounding board to go back and forth on stuff, but I don't have another counterpart here that does engineering simulation stuff with me.
No, I don't have the brain power for that.
Well, you do, but that's not the point. But the thing is that for me now, I actually think of my software and hardware as my companion on this journey.
Where are those little robot companions?
Well, I'm working on those.
Like,
I haven't pitched those yet.
What was the movie in the 80s? The one where they were trying to make it. You sent the parts in. Everyone's trying to make it collaboratively with Saunders.
Oh, the
robot.
Johnny Five.
We need one.
Yeah. Well, we made the arm thing for it, the shoulder.
No, but like we need a real one here in the shop so you can have a sounding board.
I haven't pitched that yet. We're getting there.
Oh, okay.
We're getting there. I have an idea for anyways. But yes, no, that's it's helpful for me because I'll come up with an idea. I'm like, dude, this should work. And I'm like, why doesn't it work? And I always doubt myself. And now that I have the simulation locally, I can actually just throw this in the computer and be like, mm-hmm. okay, no, this works. Like, okay, I'm on the right track. Or mm-hmm. I just, it's this validation for myself. So like I can, and also like it.
And you know, Ansys and Lenovo and NVIDIA, they probably don't even realize that they made you a friend.
They did. They made me a friend. I haven't named them yet, but I will. They will have a name. Yes, they have. It's a friend. It's my companion in day-to-day operations.
It really is.
It is. But no, it's helped me a lot. And it also helps you get rid of your design bias. And I think if you anyone that's followed what we've been doing in the last year has absolutely seen a different trend in our products, in our design, in our everything, I think is going a different direction. And that's all entirely because we have that ability now.
And it's a good thing because it is. You can't just, you know.
It's an evolution.
Be a one-trick pony. We have multiple things now.
Absolutely. And it's understanding and getting rid of, for me, it's an obsession about this. Well, workflow is an obsession for me, but also design bias. I think you have a way of thinking of something and you think you know how to solve that problem. But you're typically wrong. Like there's another way to do it and someone else is going to think of it. And so working, if you can collaboratively work with simulation and data and design and be intelligent about your workflow so it's parametrically driven, you can then actually collaborate with your systems and help find those solutions a billion times faster.
So we kind of got off, but not really, because that brings us back to the powerful computer and software we have. And now you have the streamlined harmony of AI and function and achievable output. Mm-hmm. And that's highlighted by the release of our first 3D printed direct to consumer AI assisted water bottle cage, the Genius.
Yes. 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 So, on all fronts. It's super cool. It's exciting.
So the course aired last week and then it was pre-recorded, but then you had a Simulive question and answer session after. Yep. One question that came from an aerospace engineer was about safety checks and validations within the software. So
yeah, so the, well,
what's
so,
that about?
Okay, so in aerospace, you have to get everything. There has to be the part after it's printed has to get validated.
It's aerospace.
Yes.
They're not making aerospace. A water bottle cage, but it was nice of him to ask.
Yes. Things to think about. So like there's a thing for those of you that are not simulation people, there's a thing that we call about safety factor. And most consumer products have a safety factor of like 3, 4, 5, basically meaning whatever you set your load capacity, it can achieve in a stress load, it can achieve basically 3 times that, mm-hmm. 5 times that. And so you basically have to add material in order to pass that safety check. We do that in consumer products quite often. It's very typical to do that because it just makes the product safer. In aerospace, you don't have that luxury. You typically are striving for a safety factor of 1 because the weight matters so much that mm-hmm. in order to weight and to meet the structural requirements, you basically have to do that. And then they have to validate that the part that was made the way it was supposed to be made. Right. So like after you printed the part, you have to basically put it in like a CMM machine, which is basically like a really fancy probe that basically probes the part to make sure it's validated exactly the same. It is exactly what you designed on the computer. And that becomes into a whole other problem because then you have like organic shapes are really hard to measure. So you have to use like 3D scanners and lasers to figure out if the dimensions are correct. It adds a lot of cost. So he was asking about that validation mm-hmm. approach. So we do validate our parts. The way we validate our part is by mass. So we do like a weight test to make sure that we have the right weight. And then mm-hmm. we also have a little systems where we measure known tolerances that we know get off or can, mm-hmm. which direction it's going to go off. We measure those and mark it.
So you do the science-y validation. I actually just throw the parts on the floor.
Throw the parts on the floor.
Sometimes my best test for validation is I give it to a 2-year-old. And if it's indestructible, it's great. It's a great product.
Yeah, that's a good test. But yeah, so that was a question about validation. So it's a little different approaches. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. I mean, that was actually the first question that we got.
Yeah,
so,
you also had another question from a research scientist asking about leveraging the system you talked about for composites, specifically carbon fiber, because you were talking about 3D print material.
Yes. So you can, okay. So like, this is where we get into like a little bit of a wormhole of topics, but, so inside of ANSYS Discovery, you can put material properties as composites, but it treats it, well, I'm not 100% sure how it treats it, but it should treat it as an isotropic material. It's not going to give it a directional property value. Don't quote me on that, but I'm assuming based on how I know everything works, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's exactly how it works. So for like a chopped fiber compression molded part, mm-hmm. it could work. The problem you're going to have in is you can't, within Discovery, you can't put you can put some limitations, but some of your molding restrictions, it gets really complicated on how to do it.
Is it just because people haven't tested this yet? Because the carbon fiber has been around for so long, I feel like they should be testing.
The way we use the topology optimization, it would not realistically work for composites because of some, we don't put restrictions on it because we're designing for 3D print. Now, inside of ANSYS Mechanical and Workbench, you can put variables into layup schedules. And so that's where you can optimize your geometries and topology systems, which is what we do for the RF20. Mm. So you can design your structure and then design your schedules of lays, and then you can figure out the optimal ratios of ply and ply angles and use their engines to figure out the best system. So you can, there are ways of using composites. It gets more complicated because
in my little brain right here. So basically if you use like a material, like a 3D print, like it's only printing in essentially one direction. So you know the forces and loads, but like if you lay up carbon, anyone can lay up any direction or way or however. Right. So it's always different. So it's never going to be like exactly how the simulation tells you it's going to be because of user error. Well, not error, user choice.
Yes, on a lot of what you're saying. So the main thing is that in order to figure out the simulation of the composites, you have to tell the system what direction the fiber's laying.
Right.
And which way it should be laid and how it's being laid. Mm-hmm. So, which we do for the RF20, but we give it a structure to build it off of.
Right.
We can't tell it to build it from scratch and then also figure out your layup schedule. I mean, yes, you can. There are ways of doing this, and we've been playing with some of them, but it's not into a workflow like we do with 3D print. Right. Because 3D print, especially in resin cured systems or 3D printed like metal parts, it's an isotropic material properties, which meaning that in all directions, the material performs similar. It's mm-hmm. the same response in all directions. Carbon fiber is not like that. unless you're using a chopped fiber or using some sort of reinforcement system. So mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's definitely something we're experimenting with mm-hmm. to get better at it. But
and that stuff like moves inside of a mold. I mean, once you know.
Yeah, to a certain degree. Well, it absolutely depends.
You put it in the cavity, you close it, and then you either introduce, you know, whatever
your pressure air, system.
Pressure, whatever, right. And that stuff, I mean, it moves.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it also depends. There's a lot of variables. Composites adds a whole nother layer of variables that make it far more complicated to do.
Okay.
So
that's why it's not
It's a good question. It's a good question. It's a larger conversation.
So another question that you got was about best practices, but your head was going to explode when I asked you for an answer. So that's best for a one-on-one call with Aram.
That was geared towards workflows.
If anyone has a general open-ended question like that, and you have 2 hours to 48 hours to kill, you can email him. Don't call. Don't tie up my lines, but you can email him. Okay, let's move on. I also wanted to talk about the pending release of our custom and stock size bike fitting cleat adjusters.
Yes.
So after this podcast, we should be making the cleat adjuster webpage live on our website. It's our new product. This is the second product in our 3D printed optimized products. How many times can I say products that are going to market?
Yep.
So we do a lot of bike fitting. You've done a lot, not me. I don't do bike fitting. You've done a lot of bike fitting in the past and you do it here locally. And cleat adjusters are just a vital piece of creating the correct angle and height for a foot. Mm-hmm. That basically needs adjustment from the cleat to the pedal.
Yep.
So every rider is different and they have a different pedal stroke and a heel angle, et cetera. And these adjusters, they've been around for a while from other vendors, but they seem to be getting harder to find, especially during this manufacturing lull and COVID times. Yep. And cycling as a sport has just exploded during COVID times. Yep. We've seen other companies overseas doing 3D print type of these adjuster components.
Yeah, the custom options.
But it doesn't seem like here in the US there's too many options.
Right.
So we're going to be offering these two products. One is a fully customized version and the other is a stock size. Discuss.
So when you do bike fitting, you quickly realize that everyone needs slightly different angles, if they have leg length discrepancies, and different combo. I mean, just everyone needs something a little bit different. So something that we had been, toying with.
I was just thinking, if you're ever riding your bike and Aram drives by, he's secretly judging your pedal stroke.
Yes.
Every time we drive by a cyclist, he goes, oh man, that foot is too close to the down tube, or his knee is too far out. And this is why we are making these products.
So it's to help with that. So we've always had, I have a very interesting, I have a setup that always required, I basically needed four different shims inside of my cleat to get my position correct on my right leg. And it always bothered me because I always moved and I always got caught on the pedal and just, it's kind of annoying.
Is it because your right leg is shorter than your left leg?
No, it just has to do with, that's for another day.
Do you walk with your feet pointed out?
Yes, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just weird. But that's what I need. And so it's always been a problem for me, and even how it clips in. So like if you put too many, like I run Shimano pedals. So I use their SL cleat system, and it's basically I can only use 2 degrees, and then I need to basically put another filler on the top so that I can actually click in and engage. So I couldn't get the right angle I always needed. And I just had to live with it. So this 3D printed custom wedge actually fixes that. So our new cleat adapter basically can do both the angle and the leg length discrepancy or leg length adjustment in one cleat, in one product, and it gives you a platform to click against. So
because usually you have to stack these adjusters height and angle, and once you stack them,
they move, and they can also, it becomes an issue because on certain pedal platforms, you're limited on the angle because it basically uses the base of the shoe to engage the pedal locking mechanism. Mm-hmm. So now we can actually print a platform that is perfect so that it engages with the pedal, it treats it just like a normal pedal interface, and it just locks right in.
So you get a bike fit.
Yep.
Your bike fit guy is like, hey, you need 4 degree angle and
1 millimeter.
One something, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. You go on our website.
Yep.
And voila, we have a cute little customized cleat adjuster, drop builder, down builder thing, and you put in your angles and your height, and you hit order.
Yep.
And then, well, I guess in the scenario it's you, so your twin is on the other side.
Yep.
Gets your dimensions, puts it into the software, designs the adjuster, hits print on the 3D printer, and voila.
Yep.
So in the scenario, I would then ship you your customized cleat adjuster.
Yep, that's exactly how it works. And then, so we're launching the first one with a 3-bolt pattern system, which is designed specifically for the Shimano SL cleat system. It also works with any Delta, Look Delta cleat or
which
the Kias.
Which is like for Peloton?
Peloton
right?
uses the Delta cleats. So it would work on a Peloton. It would work on a Look Kio pedal system.
I wonder
system.
What that Nordic track bike, because that's real popular now. I wonder what cleat system that has.
I don't know if it runs a 3-bolt or a 2-bolt. So we are working. Once I'm getting this one out, as soon as this one's out, we're going to make a specific one designed specifically for Kios and for the Peloton Delta. And there will be, I'm working on a slight version difference for the Peloton specifically, because there's some issues with the Peloton cleats and cleat systems. So we'll make a slight adjustment for that.
Hopefully not as many issues as with the treadmill.
Yeah, right? But yeah, so I mean, that's actually, so it's funny, we kind of started talking about this custom one when we first started the 3D print stuff, because it seemed like a really good viable part. The custom version, and we started talking to a couple bike fitters and some bike fit cyclists that get bike fits and their needs. And immediately the first thing was, okay, that's great. I love it. I'll get them. But are you going to offer stock versions? So that was like the first question we got immediately. And we wanted to evaluate and make sure our materials were good. And they worked for this, and they actually performed incredibly well. Again, back to simulation and all that data helped us a lot.
Plus, you got on your bike and rode around. Yeah.
Yeah, I use them. And other people use them as well, and we've been testing them for a while now. But it's funny. I didn't think that people were going to be that into a stock version of it.
Bike fitter just wants to have like 20 of each size or what?
Yeah, like you have them in stock and you use them. But I mean, I didn't think that there was really there's already companies that make them. There's a couple that you can get here in the States now. And I didn't really think that we were, I know that we would make a distinguished product, but I didn't think the demand was that high for it. So I wasn't going to really go down that path. But the demand is actually pretty, and we've had it's been very heavily requested. So we decided to do it, and we're doing it in a 4-pack kit where it'll have a 1-degree and a 2-degree together. So with that combination, you could do quite a bit. You can either do 1-degree, 2-degree, or 3-degree is achievable. And then, and we're going to offer it with a screw set that comes with it that should fit most systems.
If I remember to put the screws in.
If you remember to put the screws in.
I just get so excited when I start packaging.
Yeah. So
they'll be available on our website.
Yeah, they're going to be available on our website later this week. Those will be available. The custom ones will be available today. And we're shipping. The first ones we're doing are the Shimano cleat system, which is a 3-bolt system. But we're coming out with specific for the Kio, Delta, and SPD.
It says on our website as well,
yeah,
which SPD. Ones it's compatible with and what to look forward to in the future.
Yeah.
And then we're also, the stock sizes, going to work on getting those sold for on Amazon.
Yeah.
Once I find the most logical way to do that.
Yeah, we're working on that. We're trying really hard for a lot of our products that are like the sub-$100 products to make their way onto Amazon Prime.
So right.
They'll be available.
To be cost effective for both parties.
Yes, yes.
So
work for everybody, and so you can get your stuff super quick.
Cool. Anything else you want to talk about? Oh yeah, check it out. It'll be under bike fitting.
There's a new tab that's going on the website.
Tab, predatorcycling.com, bike fitting, and then under that will be the adjusters.
There'll be the adjusters and everything there. And for those of you that had already found the page last week, that have already been clicking on things.
Kudos.
Kudos to you for finding a hidden page.
People are always finding hidden pages.
Yeah, there's
you know, when you've been in business for so long and you have pages that are live and then you hide them and then they somehow still live on the internet because everything lives on the internet.
Everything does live on the internet. And I have to definitely give. There is, so for those of you that are interested, there are other hidden pages on our site of future products and future things that are coming out. If you want to poke around, good luck finding them. They do exist.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, things to look forward to. That we're going to have another exciting customer story done on us by Ansys here next month.
Yep.
He'll be flying into Nashville.
Yeah. It's actually Kurt's coming, who's on the podcast before.
Yep. And he'll be shooting some stuff. And then hopefully there will also be some more partnership type marketing going on with Ansys going forward. We're still printing up the bottle cages. And now we're going to start switching over to the wedges or the cleat adjusters. And then I also have some video marketing to shoot here on my own for our website and our social media as well.
Yeah.
Got to get on that. So anything else before we wrap up?
No, the marketing department has to get the work.
Marketing department is tired. It's not a good excuse.
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, we thank you for choosing to take some time with us, and we look forward to future breakaways. Look for us on Instagram and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and in person here in Tennessee. We ask our listeners to please share, like, and subscribe. We're available on all major streaming platforms. Thanks for listening. Have a good one, and find some time to break away.